All right, welcome to another episode of the Take the Shot podcast. I'm Nick. I am going solo again today. I'll do a quick finals recap. I didn't do anything over game six. Honestly, I was out that weekend, and the Thunder's effort in game six just did not seem to be there. And I don't know. For me, it might just be them being young, but it's a game six. You have a chance to close it out. You don't want to play around with it. It felt like they didn't really come out with the necessary effort in order to get that done. And I was just kind of like, all right, fine. If they don't give a fuck about this game, neither do I. It's probably not the best analysis, but I'm sure if you guys listen to other NBA podcasts, you've probably gotten some game six analysis, and you've probably already gotten some game seven analysis as well. I know I'm a little bit late to the party, but we've had a lot of nice off-season moves, which I will get into a little bit later. Thoughts on game seven. Thunder, again, I just don't know if it was just them being young. The second youngest team to win all time, the youngest being the Trailblazers back in the 70s, like just like post, or yeah, I think like just after post-merger, which is crazy. So definitely an unprecedented age for a finals team, but Shea, he was ready. Not sure about the others, but Shea did what he needed to do, had 29-12, got that team where they needed to be. Obviously, we know about the Halley injury on my last pod. I did state that that was possibly a risk. I guess there is some, I guess I've listened to some pods. There's been some conflicting information whether or not a calf injury can lead to an Achilles injury. I guess it's not medically confirmed, but I guess just in the NBA, we've seen it a few times where people have said that they've had some calf problems before. It led to that Achilles pop, and then with the calf problems, and then the Achilles pop. So I don't know what medically you need it to be, or statistically you need it to be to, I guess, say that it's, I guess, or correlation equals causation or whatever. That is, sorry, I'm not the best at science or math, but I've just seen enough where I feel like, yeah, if you have a calf injury, you probably don't want to play around with that. Granted, NBA Finals Game 7, he was going off, hit like three deep threes, looked like he might have had the game of his life, especially probably like his first like legitimately good game against the Thunder, and then it popped. I did say that was a possibility. I feel like we all knew it was a possibility. I doubt the Pacers. I'm sure the Pacers and Tyrese knew it was a possibility, but again, just weigh that risk reward factor of you never know when you're going to be back in the finals. You never know if you'll have the opportunity again. So I guess it just sucks that it looks like he was about to have a good game. Happened in the first quarter, 7 minutes in the first quarter, 9 points in those 7 minutes, and then it popped. Felt anticlimactic. Just didn't feel right to end the game seven that way, especially with how the series has gone. Obviously, it was a little bit deflating for the team. Thunder was still down by one at the end of the first half, so Pacers did have a chance to pull it out. However, Thunder went on a run in the third. One of the few times in the series where it felt like the Thunders actually got on one of their runs that they usually go on to truly seal the game, and that kind of is what sealed it for them. Bandic Mathurin did his best to try to bring him back in the fourth, but a little bit too little, too late. TJ McConnell did what he did as much as he could to keep him alive in the third. I don't know what Rick Carlisle was doing, not playing Pascal Siakam more. He's your best player. It's game seven in the finals. This is the last game of the season. If you got to play in the whole second half, you got to play in the whole second half. Like, hey, Pascal, we need it from you. Like, even if you're not scoring, at least be a decoy or some shit. Like, help, like, TJ go off. Help Bendick go off. Like, you just can't sit him on the bench. Like, he's your best player. You need him. Last game of the season. You got to put it all out there. You can't play for game. There's no game eight. You can't play for another game. So, just do or die. So, I guess I was just... I don't know. Weird coaching decisions, but I'm sure the whole Tyrese news kind of shook everyone up. Weird tweet I did see is that Pascal Siakam, he was there for the Tyrese Achilles tear, the Dame Achilles tear, the KD Achilles tear, and the Clay ACL tear, which, I don't know. It doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but just a random tweet I saw, and I was like, oh, interesting. But congrats to the Thunder for winning the NBA Finals. Shea had a historic season, won MVP, Finals MVP, scoring champion, and won the NBA championship. So congrats to him, the rest of the Thunder. A little bit funny to see that they just really didn't know how to celebrate, didn't know how to pop champagne. Caruso had to teach them all how to pop champagne. Figured at least Hart probably threw a couple drinks back in his day, so I figured he might know, but I guess he doesn't. I'm sure. Big J will. He wasn't a fan of the beer. He was like, fuck it, just give me that tequila. But yeah, that's just how they got down. Now, let's see. Was there any other finals? Yeah, I guess Obi... Topping, I guess he said that Tyrese injury kind of affected him. It was just hard to, said it was hard for him to play normal after just seeing that, which I agree. But NBA Finals, last game of the season, you got to just power through it, move on. Tyrese, wish the best for him, but just sucks to happen, and especially with him just being the engine of that team and how that team runs through him. Like, if he's not running, when he wasn't even running 100%, that team was under 500. So just seeing that team run next year without him, they'll probably still make it to the playoffs just because the East is so trash. But let's get into some of the offseason movement. It does seem like some East teams are making some moves, especially with that conference being so down. The Pacers, obviously down for next year now because Tyrese isn't coming back. The Celtics are down, but they don't seem to be completely giving up on the season. Seems like they are still going to be competitive. We can get into that. First, the Drew Holiday trade. They trade away Drew for Anfernee Simons. Saved about $5 million there. And then also got 2 second-round picks, which the Blazers traded away Drew Holiday to the Celtics and then got him back on a much bigger I'm pretty sure on a bigger contract, but it's just weird to trade him back. I just don't know why they had to throw in the 2 second-round picks. Like, this, like, everyone knew the Celtics were trying to dump the money. Yeah, I know you're probably not trying to pay Simons, but Simons is younger and he probably still has some room to grow in his career, where Drew Holiday, he's just on the downhill and he's getting paid a ton of money and being paid way less than Simons. Don't really see why you need to throw in those 2 second-round picks, but I guess the rich just get richer. So Boston, congrats on getting those 2 second-round picks and Anfernee Simons. Anfernee would definitely help to make up for some of that scoring that they lost with Tatum. I know people say that they probably lost some scoring with Porzingis, but Porzingis was so in and out of the lineup. It's really hard to say that they missed him, even in the finals. Like, they didn't really miss Porzingis. He just came back for the last game and then balled out. But again, that was just for the last game. I still think that they were beating Dallas without him, even if he wasn't able to come back. Just weird. And I guess just with that mystery illness that apparently no one can figure out what it is, and even though I'm sure he's seen the best doctors in the world, I guess we'll see how he plays with Trae Young and if he's able to ball out. I'm sure the Hawks will be better next season. They'll have Trae Young, they'll have Jalen Johnson, hopefully for a full season, who definitely is underrated, not really talked about in the mainstream, but I'm sure, well, I don't know. I need to see the Hawks be good before I officially will believe it, but hopefully he's able to stay healthy. I'm sure they're probably moving on from Clint Capella. They'll probably keep Kongwu, maybe play like, I guess Porzingis might be the center, but may play more like a stretch four, assuming he's able to play. But that, honestly, just going through the East right now, I could see them being a top four team, but I wouldn't guarantee it. But let's just take a look at the East right now. I'm going to see, like, I guess right now I just want to make some predictions for the Eastern Conference. So I probably think Cleveland, they'll probably stay in one or two. I would assume the Magic, I would say they are top three. Knicks are top three. So I'd say those are probably your top three seeds next year. I actually think Detroit might be a top four seed. But I'd probably say that's the top tier of the conference. I would put Cleveland on their own tier, but just seeing how the finals went this year, how the Eastern semis went for them this year is hard to say. But granted, Garland obviously wasn't healthy, but we will see. But we'll put those three teams in their own tier. Next year, I would probably put Detroit and Boston in. Maybe the Hawks can sneak up into that tier, but probably put those two on the tier on their own. So I'd say those will probably be your top five seeds next year, assuming I guess good health for Jaylen Brown and Derek White and Anthony Simons. But those three in the East will definitely, that can get you a top four seed in the East. That is how bad the East is. Pacers, I think they will be down, but I guess probably in that next tier, I'm probably going to put the Pacers, the Hawks, the Bulls, Chicago, maybe Toronto, and Philly in that next tier. I guess they have a chance to make the playoffs, but we'll see what we actually get from them. Not counting on Joel Embiid to play games until, if he's there, he's there. If he's not there, that's fine. And then absolute bottom of the East will probably be Brooklyn, Charlotte, Washington. I feel like the usual suspects there. Washington seems to be gearing up with $100 million worth of cap space, and I believe in 2026-27, but we will see how that goes. I guess, yeah, just getting back into those trades. So I guess really with Boston, they're out of the second apron, which really opens up a lot of flexibility for them, allows them to make more trades, and saves them a ton of money on the luxury tax. Not that we really should care about the luxury tax, but more just the team building aspect of it that really saves them there. Obviously, it does feel like next year will probably be a gap year for them. I don't think it's going to be like a year where they fall out of the playoffs, assuming decent health and they'll be able to stay relatively healthy. But just with they are already one of the most talented teams in the NBA, so they can afford to take a little bit of a step back. I guess we just gotta wait and see how Tatum bounces back from that Achilles tear. I guess since he will miss all next season. Listen to Bill Simmons. I know he's thinking, what if Tatum can come back next year? For who? For what? Like, there's no point in bringing him back next year. Achilles, that's one injury you don't want to mess around with. You don't want to bring him back too soon. You don't want him to injure anything else. So just bring him back in 26, 27. Hopefully he's fully healthy by then. It'd probably take him a little bit of time to work back into NBA game shape, especially not playing for a full year. But I think there's zero chance Boston brings him back next year, even if they're on a playoff run, just because you're not bringing him into that playoff intensity. But an Achilles tear, that's usually like a year injury. If Boston brings it back next year, I'm happy to be wrong on that, but I honestly doubt they risk it. I think next year they just play it out, see what they have with that team, see if they make any more moves. I think they're probably just try to re-sign who they have. They'll probably try to re-sign Horford and Cornette and probably keep the team as is. I don't really see them making any other big moves this offseason unless someone probably, I guess there are rumors about people, they're taking conversations on Derek White and Jaylen Brown, but unless someone absolutely blows them away, I don't think they're trading them. Just because you do want to at least have some people there when Tatum is back on the team. You don't want to completely tear the team down, before he comes back. Because then if he comes back and there's no one on the team, he might just be like, fuck this shit, I'm out of here. But I don't see them really blowing up the team any further. I think if they do make any other moves, it'd be more on the edges. Maybe like a trade, like a Sam Hauser or a Baylor Shireman or a Peyton Pritchard, something like that. But granted, they're all white, so Boston may just try to keep them. Maybe they try to get a TJ McConnell, but, that's my outlook for Boston. The Wizards, they do seem to be bringing in at least some veterans, hopefully helping that team grow. Hopefully they're not completely, hopefully just helping those young guys grow, showing them what it's like to be an NBA player, bringing that team along. CJ, president of the Players Association, great vet to have in your locker room. Same with Chris Middleton. He's also been in the league, NBA champion, great vet to have in the locker room. They've both been in big playoff series. Hopefully can teach those at Washington Wizards how to win. I just don't think they really have any blue chip prospects on their team, anyone that can truly benefit from that, anyone that can really elevate the Wizards to the next level. Maybe they get lucky in this draft, even though they do pick at 6, but we will see. Brooklyn, let me see. I know they have acquired a lot of draft picks. I feel like they are planning to make some moves, if not early tomorrow, definitely during the draft, because they're, I believe they have 5 or 6 first round picks. Let me look that up right now, though. Ace Bailey, the teams that he's rumored to want to go to is the Nets, Pelicans, and the Wizards. He believes that those would be the best situations for him. Definitely don't want to go to the Pelicans or the Nets. The Wizards, just because, as I always tell Alec, the Wizards is where careers go to die. So Brooklyn, they have 8, 19, 22, 26, and 27, which no way they draft all of those. Maybe they package like 8, 19, and like 27 and try to move up with Charlotte or something. Maybe they do that with Philly, and then Philly tries to move those assets and then get like a vet or something. But so the 8 pick is their pick, number 19, originally held by the New Orleans Pelicans. This pick came to Brooklyn via Portland, Detroit, and New York in previous trades. The number 22 pick was acquired from the Atlanta Hawks in the deal with Porzingis. 26th pick was from the Knicks for the Mikal Bridges deal. And the 27th pick is belonging to the Phoenix Suns. This pick landed through the Nets through a quick swap with Houston. So that is how they have all five of those picks. But they're definitely making some move tomorrow. I guess I don't know if Ace Bailey's their guy, but it feels like he might be. I believe he's a local, relatively local kid from Jersey, so I'm sure they've probably been scouting him for a while. At this point, you probably don't really. I know you don't necessarily need the workouts or the medicals, but well, obviously they get the medicals anyway, because that did change in the new CBA. But you probably don't really need the interviews or the workouts. If you believe that's your guy, you believe that's your guy, and they probably might just trade up to get him. Just to make sure no one else can take him. I could see them making a deal with Danny Ainge. I feel like he might be willing to, if he's not completely in love with any of these prospects, he might be willing to take a step back and draft a little bit lower and get some extra picks out of the deal. But yeah, I suppose those are the big moves so far. Let me just take a look to see if there's anything. Oh yeah, Kyrie declined his player option. They're projecting him to sign another 3-year, $119 million deal. As well as Daniel Gafford. I believe he got 3 years, $60 million. So there is that for the Mavs. Let me see. Let me just make sure I'm not missing any other big NBA stories. Obviously, the Thunder Parade was today. That's not the best podcasting, but definitely trying to learn how to multitask. I see the NBA approved the official sale of the Wolves and the Lynx. So I guess congrats to Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez. Why will this not give me NBA data? Okay, sorry. Should just go to Shams Twitter and just look it up that way. Honestly, don't watch them do that. Let's see. Shams. Shams Sarania. Alright, let's see. So it looks like the Celtics are taking calls on Jaylen Brown and Derek Wright. I guess Kyrie will most likely be out most next year with that torn ACL. I suppose we'll see if he does come back next season. He just started so late in the season. It's not guaranteed he'll come back, but ACLs, those are a little bit easier to come back than Achilles. All right, opportunistic. So Boston, Atlanta, and Brooklyn are finalized three team trade that sends Kristaps Porzingis and second round pick to the Hawks, Terrence Mann and Atlanta's number 22 pick to the Nets, and then George Niang and a second rounder to the Celtics. Okay. I guess I didn't fully break down the New Orleans Pelicans Wizards trade. The Pelicans get Jordan Poole and Sadiq Bey and CJ McCollum, Kelly Olynyk, and a future second rounder go to the Washington Wizards. And I guess, oh, and then the Pelicans get an extra second round pick this year, number 40. I guess that's good for, honestly, I have no fucking idea what the Pelicans are trying to do. I guess this leaves them with, I guess they have someone who likes to handle the ball even more than CJ and wants to take more shots than CJ. But then you also got Zion on the team. I guess Brandon Ingram isn't really there anymore to take up shots, but you also got Trey Murphy. Not really sure what the Pelicans are doing, but I'm assuming they'll probably make more moves this season or this offseason, so we'll see what else they do there. Looks like the Portland Trailblazers are picking up Matisse Thybulle's $11.5 million. Matisse Thybulle's picking up his player option for the 25-26 season. The Knicks are interviewing Mike Anori for a head coaching job. So the Knicks still don't have a coach. So I will update you then. Definitely will do something after the first round tomorrow. Draft night is always one of my favorite nights. Kind of wish they kept it to one night. Because I was honestly, my favorite thing about the NBA draft is like, great night. And like, you got to see everything in one night. I suppose they're hoping that more trades and stuff happen. Spread nights, two nights. So we'll see. But who knows? If it doesn't work in a couple years, I'll probably just move it back to one night, but we will see. Well, it looks like the Celtics are rebuilding, heading, okay, so it looks like Trey Mann is recovered from his herniated disc. I guess I'm kind of interested to see what Dallas does. They did sign Gafford to that extension. We'll see if they just want to stay big with Gafford, Lively, Anthony Davis, and Cooper Flagg. I know people say Cooper Flagg's a four, but honestly, I feel like if he needs to, he can play the three. Definitely wouldn't mind him. Just why not just try it out, see how he plays at the three for his first year, assuming that they do take him, but it's the Mavs and Nico Harris, so I guess we can never be too sure. But yeah, it looks like that is all the NBA news for now. Not really much else going on, but I'll talk to you guys later.